Thank you, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. And I am a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's wonderful to be here. And I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, which isn't a record around AA. It's a record for me. But it's good to be here. It's good to be alive. It's good to be sober. Good to be with you guys. Good to be fellowshipping with you. I had a experience, as I often have, of having dinner with some of the guys I drove up here with and some of the guys that I met when I'm up here. I really like fellowshipping with people. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. We're on the third step tonight. I'm sure I'll mention something about it. Some people think that all I do when I do the step meetings are 12 separate meetings about the third step. That's not really true. Sometimes I actually talk about the 11th step. But I pretty much am interested in the one thing, the only thing I think is important, and that is a relationship with God. I believe, and this is just my personal opinion, you know, it's, listen, you're entitled to your opinion. You don't have to buy into any of this stuff. Listen, you just sort of, it's like, you know, you take what you want, you leave the rest, you know, you think about it. You know, maybe 10 years down the road you'll agree, maybe you'll disagree, it doesn't matter, it's just an AA meeting. I'm just here to expose my ideas to you. That's all I'm doing, trying to be as transparent as possible and as honest as possible and tell a little bit about my story, because that's what discloses the whole deal. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like. And what it says on page 29 is it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each person, in the personal stories, describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. I'm not making this stuff up. That's what it says. That's what it says our AA things are about, our stories are about. That each individual in his own language and his own personal stories describes in his own way how he established his relationship with God. So whenever I speak, that's the only thing I'm interested in really getting at. That is the deal. That is the main thing. And I've seen him drink in here a lot after staying sober, and I've seen him not drink, and I've seen him stay sober and be mad and upset and feeling sorry for themselves at 14, 20, 25 years sober, and I've seen what emotional sobriety looks like. And to me, the common denominator always has to do with a relationship with God. And the more I read this book, I'll tell you, I've read a lot of it. You know, I thought I had read it when I first came in, and then I read it again, and then I read it again. And you know, there's nothing like reading the book Alcoholics Anonymous at 3 o'clock in the morning when you have no money. There's nothing like reading the book Alcoholics Anonymous when it's 3 o'clock in the morning and the doctor tells you you have cancer. I mean, you really want to read this book when you think you're going to die. You really want to read this book when you think there's no hope. But really, you get a lot more out of it. You'd be surprised how much you really take to heart this book and even read stuff that ordinarily you just throw away when you're desperate. Desperation, I'll tell you, it covers a lot of areas. You know, especially it covers, we talked last week on false pride. Intellectual, Dr. Bob called it intellectual pride. Or let me see what exactly he called it in the book. He says, in Dr. Bob story, he says the following. This isn't me, this is Dr. Bob. He says, if you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. That's the co-founder. You know, that is actually the co-founder that Bill Wilson looked up to. He was the one that was considered the steadiest, the most spiritual. I mean, Bill Wilson did a lot of great things. You know, he's a wonderful guy. He's not my higher power. Neither is Dr. Bob. But I mean, it's between the two, the guy who I think most people understand was the steadiest, the most, the one that Bill relied on for strength was Dr. Bob. And he minced no words about the whole deal. He said, if you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. You know, that's pretty, you know, it's pretty tough love sort of language. It's like in your face kind of stuff. You know, that's, I mean, I don't know, if I was an atheist, that would hurt my feelings. I'd get mad. It says, your heavenly Father will never let you down. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about what I like to talk about, and I think probably the only thing I really should talk about is my own experience in this deal. You know, the older I get, 63 years old now, been married for a little over 31 years, have 4 children and 6 grandchildren, and most of the time I'm self-supporting through my own contributions, and you know, I've been through most of this. I've been through a lot of stuff, not everything, but I've been through a lot of stuff more than once. They say, as iron sharpens, I think the Bible says, Old Testament, as iron sharpens iron, man sharpens man. And so I am going to talk a lot about fellowship, because I've been thinking, the longer I'm alive and the longer I work these steps, and the more I get to hang around guys I sponsor and hang around people, you learn a lot from hanging around people. You learn a lot from hanging around yourself. You learn a lot from hanging around men that are older than you are and wiser than you are. I once heard a guy tell me, he says, the man you'll be 5 years from now will depend upon the men or women you hang around with and the books you read. And the truth of the matter is, what I found is the books I read depend upon who I hang out with. So it all has to do with who you hang out with. That's probably why it says in Vision for You, God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. I mean, after all, who you hang out with really determines upon what you're thinking about. I mean, if you're hanging around with guys that are talking about girls, or girls that are talking about guys or gals that are talking about stuff or things or money or cars or whatever it is, the pelf that we talk about, if you're hanging around that, chances are as you leave that conversation, you're going to be thinking about that stuff. You're going to be thinking about what you have. You're going to be thinking what you don't have. You're going to be thinking what they have and why you don't have it. And you're going to be thinking about that stuff at night. You're going to be measuring your insides by what they look like on the outside. You're going to be measuring your whole life. And, you know, it's going to be an obsessive sort of deal with you. You're going to be thinking and talking, worrying about and measuring yourself by the stuff that you think is important to the people you hang around. And I'm going to guess, based upon the life I've lived, that if that's your deal, you're going to always feel you're coming up short. I'm going to guess you're going to probably feel kind of crappy about yourself if that's your deal. Because I don't think I'm that different than most people, and I used to do that, and I used to feel crappy about myself and have bad thoughts about myself and other people. And it wasn't until I started hanging around men, for me it's mostly men, not that there aren't wonderful women, but for me it was mostly men, that where the conversation rested on other things, different things. You know, as much as I wanted to talk about the money, and as much as I wanted to talk about the women, they would not let me. They would not let me. I mean, I remember talking to my sponsor and saying to him, look at that gal, look at that blonde. Look at that blonde in the front row. And I remember him looking at me, he says, Russell, what was your favorite drink? I said, what? He says, what was your favorite drink? And I said, Scotch, I like scotch. He says, you see that blonde? He says, what kind of scotch? I said, I drank J&B. He says, you see that blonde in the front row? I said, yeah. He says, that's a bottle of J&B with legs to you. And now here's the scary thing. This is the scary thing. This is the truth. Every time I'd see a gal, a good-looking gal that I was attracted to, and I'd look at her, and she looked good for about 10 seconds, and then all of a sudden, I'd see that green bottle forming around her body. That's a turn-off, by the way. You know what I mean? It's not a turn-on. But I wouldn't have gotten that deal from that conversation. I wouldn't have walked away from that conversation, that one conversation. And that's a true story. You know, I'm not, like, making this stuff up for a joke. I'm just telling you something that happened to me. One day I'm sitting in an A meeting talking about gals, and a guy looks at me and he says, that's a bottle of scotch with legs to you. That was 31 years ago. I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember it throughout my entire life. It set in motion my whole relationship with women in Alcoholics Anonymous. Every relationship with every woman I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous was somehow, some way influenced by his telling me, stay away from that type of relationship in AA. Now, I'm not saying if you're married to somebody in AA, you're doing something wrong. I'm just telling you my story. You can take from that whatever you want. You know what I mean? I'm not judging anybody. I'm just telling you my story. I am absolutely convinced that if I started running around this room using it as eHarmony, that I would have been drunk after the first 6 months. Because sexual and romantic relationships was just as much my booze as alcohol. Just like it was for you. Just like it was for you, and just like it'll always be for you. Just like you can't have a safe drink, you can't even have a safe think about that stuff. But to the extent that we surrender all, you see, it's all about surrendering. You know, it's hard enough. How much pain does an alcoholic have to do to surrender the booze? For how many years, how many people does he have to hurt to finally surrender the booze? And once he surrenders the booze, which is but a symptom, one symptom of a horrible disease, how much more pain over how many more years does it take to surrender all the other symptoms and all the other things that go with alcohol? You think it's the end of the story just because you surrender the booze? Well, if you've been around here long enough, you know that's not true. You know that men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol, and that they're restless, they're irritable, and they're full of this disease, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort that comes with it once by taking a few drinks. You know that the drinking is just basically our solution. We named the disease after the booze, but the booze is really our cure for a while. But we have other cures. For men, women are cures. People are cures. You know, sports are cures. Cars are cures. Money is cures. So we got a lot of cures, you know, for this disease. Breast implants could be a cure, you know, and I don't know why. You know, I saw that sign. I told you about that sign I saw. Did I tell this group about the sign? You know, I mean, this disease is an insidious disease. You know, I'm driving along the street in Miami. You can go down there now. You'll probably see the sign. And I'm driving along the street in Miami on US 1 by the Collection, if you know where that is. As I'm driving along, I look up and there's this huge billboard. You guys ought to start looking at billboards. Not that you don't do it anyway, but start looking at billboards. You know, start looking at TV differently. Start looking at the movies differently. Look at the movies with a different eye. Look at what you're being fed on a daily 24-hour basis on TV. Look at commercials. Look at billboards. Look at everything that's happening in your life that you're exposed to every day, from music videos to everything you expose yourself to on a 24-hour basis every day. You look at this, but look at it with a different eye. Look at it that you're an alcoholic and you're being bombarded with stuff that isn't necessarily good for you. You know, Bill Wilson said the emotional sobriety, the next frontier is, and our real problem is unhealthy dependencies. And I wasn't ready to hear that when I first came in here because, you know, that was my life. You know, the alcoholic life seems the only normal one. But I'm driving along US 1 one day and, you know, I have 30 years. I've been doing this for 30, 31 years. And I look up and I see this huge billboard right there and has a woman's body. You can't see her face. It's cut off from like here down to here. And I see this woman's in a bathing suit that's cut very low. And, you know, I'm a man and I look at that thing and I think the first thought that went through my mind after 30 years is, if I only had one of those. I only had one of those. I'd have a heart attack if I had one of those. You know? But you know, I started thinking, you know, because I, you know, because of this program and because of what's happened in my life, I started thinking, you know, I had that thought and I sort of laughed about it. I snickered about it because I know that if I only had one of those, it's like if I only had a drink. It never fixed me. I've had those. It never fixed me. Just like I've had drinks, it never fixed me. And I laughed. I sort of chuckled about the fact that with all my training, with all my AA, with all my faith in God, with everything I do today, my default, almost fallback position, this is how insidious it is as soon as I see that picture, the first thought, not the second thought, the first thought that goes through my mind is if I only had one of those. And so I started thinking, what effect must this have on people that don't even do the stuff we do, or go through the training we go through, or do the steps we do, or don't even believe it. What effect? Well, of course it has the effect that that sign, that's why they pay $10,000 a month to have that sign. It has the exact effect that they want to have. I must have one of those. I've got to have one of those, or else I'm not a man if I don't have one of those. I'm just a worthless piece of crap because I don't have one of those. And then I'm thinking, and then underneath the sign it has in big red letters, breast implants or breast enlargement or something like that because she had, you know, broken wrists. You know what I'm talking about? And so I started thinking. I said, this is even meant for me. This is meant for the gals. So I'm thinking, now the gals are driving along. What are they thinking? If I only had those, I'd be okay. They can't rape, rob, and steal so they can get $7,000 to get some of those so they can be okay. And if they got those, they're looking at that incredible bathing suit and says, I wish I had that. And that's just one lousy billboard. One lousy billboard that tells you you really are a piece of crap if you don't have those, that, or this. And why don't you have that? And the streets are loaded with billboards. And then you start watching the movies and the TVs, and they're all billboards. And you go to the movies, and you watch, and they're all billboards. And you wonder why you walk around thinking you're such a piece of crap all the time. And everybody you talk to are talking about that billboard stuff, all that kind of stuff that we look at. We don't have a shot. Normal people don't have a shot. You know, I mean, if we were really hanging around healthy people, I mean, let's face it, Bloomingdale's would be out of business. You know, they're not there. I mean, I'm not putting down Bloomingdale's or Macy's, you know, that's my wife's temple, you know what I mean? But I'm not putting that stuff down. But let's face it, they're not there for our spiritual health and well-being. They're there to turn a buck, make a profit, so they can get a breast enlargement or something like that. You know what I mean? Do what they have to do. And this is the kind of stuff we're battling in the world, as it says in the Bible. We're battling spiritual evil and spiritual flesh. We're battling stuff you don't even see, feel. You're swimming in it. You're swimming in it, and you don't even know it. And it's like coming at your eyes. You can't help it coming at your eyes, and it's peeling away your brain, and it's infiltrating into your entire body, and you're thinking it all the time, and you're thinking about it all the time, and when you're in the default position, it's like music in your brain. Breasts, bathing suits, money, cars, it's all over the place, and you want to know, how come I feel the way I feel? How come I feel with it, Phil? And that once a week, maybe you go for an hour, a couple of hours, you go to a meeting where they talk a little bit about God. And, you know, maybe you hear a bit about that. You're probably thinking while the meeting's going on for the first 15 minutes if the guy's boring about that stuff you saw on the TV or you saw in the movie or that car or whatever it is. And maybe we'll get about 3 minutes of the God stuff. And then you walk out of here and start managing your life and try to figure out, well, what am I going to do about this car? And, you know, how can I get rid of this wife? Or I wish I had another gal. Or why don't I have a girlfriend? And all that sort of stuff, you know what I mean? That's if you're sober. That's if you're sober. And that's where the real alcoholism strikes. You know, that's the real alcoholism. That's where it really goes for you. And so I'm reading this book. So I started thinking about the third step a little bit. Of course, I did a formal third step. I ultimately did it. I didn't come in here. I didn't come from a religious background. I worship the stuff I'm talking about. I wouldn't have told you I worship that. I mean, you don't walk in here. You don't really walk in here thinking about this stuff, do you? You know, it's just a way of life. It's just, you know, this is the way I think. This is the stuff I talk about. This is the stuff that's important. Hey, this is the stuff that the world is important. My alcoholic thinking seems the only normal way of thinking. My alcoholic life seems the only normal way of life. The people I hang out with, the things that are important, what I'm going for seems normal. As a matter of fact, the only people that feel the way you feel, Russ, are like goofs, you know, like these Jesus, these wackos. You know, it's like a fringe thing. You know what I mean? I mean, let's face it, the main population feels, you know, like, you know, the guy who dies with the most toys is important. And all this stuff that you're putting down is important. It's all on TV, all the movie stars. You know, all the sports stars. Everybody, I know what's important. It's what the world thinks is important. So I think it's important because basically I'm the follower. I'm not a leader. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a follower. You know, I mean, I feel kind of crappy about myself. You know, they say egomaniac with an inferiority complex. I think we just basically have an inferiority complex. And if I'm in a country and western bar, I'm drinking beer. And if I'm in Manhattan, I'm drinking scotch on the rocks. And if I'm in, you know, Key West, I'm drinking margaritas. And I never get them mixed up. I never go in a country and western bar. So they give me a margarita. I'm doing whatever the other guys are doing to do so that they will like me and I'll look cool and I'll fit in. I'm a follower. I'm a guy, you know, if you put me with a bunch of racists, I'm a racist. If you put me with guys who are doing cocaine, I'm doing cocaine. If you put me with potheads, I'm a pothead. I'm whatever I have to be to you so that you will love me and not reject me. That's what I am, you know? If there's five guys in the room nailing Jesus to the cross, I'm nailing him to the cross too. If they're all believers, I'm a believer. I'm going to go along with the crowd because I feel so crappy about myself. The only thing I know about me is that if you like me, I'm okay. If you don't like me, I'm a piece of crap. It has never that you're a piece of crap. It's I'm a piece of crap. You see? And so my whole world is built upon what you think about me. You know, and I'm always second-guessing myself, and I basically live a life built, you know, as I told you, the old story, the old joke, whatever it is, but it's true. It's not even a joke. I wish it was a joke. When I was 9 years sober, they took away all my credit cards because I spent more money than I make, apparently going to something called debt. And why did I spend money? Buying stuff I didn't need with money I didn't have to impress people I didn't like. I didn't even need the stuff. You know, I told you the story already about the Camaro. I'm not going to tell you, but, you know, the Camaro. I mean, buying cars and buying things and extending myself so that I would look good to other people. Because I needed to do that because I had no measuring stick inside myself. And so I'm thinking about this. I'm sort of thinking about the third step this week. And I started thinking in terms of, you know, what actually happened to me, you know, as far as... You know, I want to read a little bit about the book that I think is important, but I also want to talk a little bit about testimony, what was actually going on with me. I'm not even sure I've got it all wrapped up together, but there's certain images that came forth in my mind. You know, it says, I sort of think that we set ourselves up, or at least I set myself up for the third step, long before I actually did the formal third step. It's kind of incredible when I think about what actually happened to me. You know, it says here, where is it? I was just looking, it says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. I mean, I want you to think about if you want what we have and you're willing. Now, one of the things I say through meetings, and I believe it's true, is that there's a step before the steps. And I think this is the step before the steps because it says if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain. Then you're ready to. You're not even ready to take the steps. You know, when I went to school, and I would take, like, mathematics. I was in the mathematics and sciences. There were things called prerequisites. If you were going to take trigonometry, you had to take algebra first or something like that. If you're going to take calculus, you had to take algebraic geometry. If you're going to, you know, everything, you had to take a course that would push you forward to the next course. And it seems that before you even take the steps, there seems to be a step before the steps. It's if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So apparently, without even knowing it or guessing at it, it's just like it says in the Bible, like iron sharpens iron, men sharpen men. Apparently, in Alcoholics Anonymous, with these men, just like Bill Wilson looked up to one other man or one or two other people, if you read Dr. Bob McGill, old-timers, and Dr. Bob looked up to Bill Wilson, and then a lot of guys looked up to Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, and, you know, not that we put them in pedestals, but we do sort of an A. We look at other people and we say, I wish I could be like him. I wish I could be like this person. Well, what happens apparently in this thing is we develop something called a we. A we. It says it in the book. It says, if you want what we have. Apparently, when Dr. Bob, you look at Bill Wilson and Bob Smith when they walk into Alcoholics Anonymous number 3's room. I mean, what is the motivation to change? What is the motivation? What gets people to move from spot A to spot B? And you look at Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, Bill Dotson, who was a mover and shaker in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you see what he says, just listen to sort of like the attitude he had here. Here's his attitude. He's got Bill Wilson in his living room, and he says the following. This is page 191. I think I read this last week. I'm going to read it again. It says, he's saying this. He's about 15 years sober. He's writing this. This is right after Dr. Bob, if you want to read it, his story. He says, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others, listen, remember, if you want what we have, he says, I noticed that others, he had just gotten out of the hospital. He was already developing his we, his other people. He says, I noticed that he knew nothing about AA. He knew nothing about God. He knew nothing about anything. And this is what he says. He says, I noticed that others seemed to have a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I came out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, now this is before the big book. This is before anything. All they were doing was reading the Bible. And he's looking at Bill Wilson. And he says, Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I have to keep on talking about it and telling other people. I thought, this guy's like 2 weeks sober. He says, I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it, and he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program for me. So what turned this guy around? What turned this guy around is he was looking at other people. And he was enamored with other people. He wanted what other people had. He saw something in other people that was authentic, that he wanted, and he listened to them. He opened up his mind and he listened to them. And I start, and what does it say? It says, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And I started looking at my own personal experience, and you know, and I sort of like, I think, in a sense, almost took the third step before I even took the third step. You know, out of desperation, maybe. I mean, I remember when I was, you know, in December of 1980, I'm 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm in my living room, my bedroom, watching TV, and there's some preacher on TV. I'm a Jewish kid from New York. And I thought my life was over and it was never going to get better again, and I couldn't stop drinking. And I'm all alone, and I've got nothing. And he starts, you know, doing what preachers do. You know, talking about God, talking about the Lord, talking about the gospel, and all. Next thing I know, I find myself on my knees, you know, accepting Jesus. And I'm a Jewish kid from New York. Does that mean you? I'm not telling you got to do that. You know what I'm telling you? I'm telling you exactly what happened. I'm 31 years old, and I'm on my knees, saying the sinner's prayer. Why? Why did that happen to me? Why did it happen? I got up. I didn't stop drinking. I went to sleep. 1 month later, I'm in a hospital gurney, having been through an accident, almost killing somebody else, almost killing myself, blacked out of the wheel. And I look up at the sky and I say, God help me. God help me. You know, with as much faith, I mean, I can't even explain. Why would I say that? I lived the life of debauchery. All I did was run around trying to see whether I could get laid, drinking and drugging and doing all that sort of stuff. And all of a sudden, I'm in the hospital bed, 1 month after the time when I got down on my knees and, you know, accepted Christ, and all of a sudden, I'm looking at the sky and I'm saying, God, help me. God, help me. And meaning it. I mean, it wasn't just saying, God, help me, like, God, help me, or God, Don, or it was like, God, help me. And all of a sudden, something happened to me. I can't even explain to you what happened to me. I'm not even going to go into what happened to me. It was something. Not everybody has these kind of experiences. I'm not saying you have to have it, but I had an experience. Next thing you know, some guy comes to my bed and he's at where I'm lying in the hospital, and he starts talking to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, you don't have to drink anymore if you don't want to, and I didn't want to, and I wanted what he had. And I followed him into Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was my mentor, along with other people he introduced me to for years. How was I pulled along by this thing? How did I get from being an atheist or an agnostic or not believing any of this stuff to all of a sudden, you know, believing? Because I hung around with these men. I saw something in these men. I hung out with men who were not mockers. I'm not even saying there was anything intentional about it. I don't think, you know, I walked in today, like I jokingly say, but it's true. I had two neurons working. They were waving goodbye at each other. You know, I mean, I couldn't get a thought together. I couldn't keep a thought together. But I was somehow blessed enough to be attracted to men who were old timers, who took this thing real seriously. They didn't put down religion. They were walking big books. You know, there's a part in the big book where it says we encourage church membership or synagogue membership. There's a part of the big book where it says in the family afterwards, it says the family should think about joining a religious denomination and get more and more into this God thing instead of the Biltmore. You know, there's a part of the big book. There's a part of the big book that says we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. we begin to see where religious people are at. Did you know that? There's a part in the big book that says that. Do you know that everything that's in here came from the Bible and or some other religious book? Do you know that the original sponsor this in this thing, their sponsors, their mentors were pastors and preachers like Sam Shoemaker that came out of the Oxford Group? Did you know that? Did you know that these men never joked about or put down religion? You see some guy in some AA meeting talking badly about religion or putting it down, and you think that's AA. The men I hung out with, the smirkers and the guys that are smarter than, you know, the smart Alex, you know, and you think that's AA. You think that's what sobriety looks like. You know what that is? That's alcoholism. Walking around here with a chip on your shoulder against religion or against anything. Being pissed off at anything. You know what that is? That's alcoholism. I don't care if you got 40 years, it's alcoholism. I don't care if you're one of these old farts in the corner saying, I put the plug in the jug, it's all a bunch of crap. It's alcoholism. It's not what I want. It's not that I'm hanging around 40 years to be alone in the corner and I'm not sponsoring anybody because nobody wants what I have. Because I'm just pissed off at myself and other people and I'm dry as a bone. But the men I hung out with, you want to know something? I never heard one of them put down priests or rabbis or put down religion or anything like that. They had friends. They believed in that stuff. They were believers. These were serious contenders. These were serious guys. And, you know, you start hanging around with people that, and you know what they conversed about? They didn't converse about, well, I told you how they conversed about women. They loved women. They thought women were fantastic. But, you know, you started in with the woman thing. You know, I told you about that deal. It's a bottle of scotch with legs. You need to be focusing on other things. You want to try to help somebody out. Men sponsor men, women sponsor women. You know what I mean? We're not going to get involved in that deal. These were serious guys. They didn't put up with much. You know, it was very easy. They said, why don't you just go drink? You don't have to hang around here. You know, they didn't want you polluting them. You know, you wanted to hang around with them, they loved you. You know what I mean? They weren't going to put up with your stuff. And these were the men I hung out with. And these are the men I still hang out with. And I noticed that as I go along in life, there were always men, and you know, men like this lead you to other men. Who lead you to other men. Because they don't suffer food. Fools. Food, I got food on my mind. They don't, no, but they ate a lot too. But they don't. They don't suffer fools. And these are the guys that led me to guys like Joe Snyder, you know, like Eddie Edwards, like Ray O'Keefe. You know, like with other people, other men that were, you know, very well respected in here. You know, they were focusing on this stuff. They looked like? They looked like the big book. They talked like the big book. They talked about the thing in the big book and the 12 and 12 and Dr. Bob of the Good Old Thomas. They were knowledgeable about this material. They knew, they were sober. I may not have been able to be sober, but I didn't know what sobriety was all about, but I knew what they were about. And if you hang around men like that enough, and you know, to this day, I'm always doing that. I'm doing the same thing that this guy, Alcoholics Number 3, did. You know, he says, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got, something a person ought to have. To this day, 31 years sober, you know, I belong to a church, you know, I'm married 31 years, I got kids, I got grandchildren, I got a law office and everything. To this day, I'm a deacon in my church, I do whatever I can do to try to help other people and everything. To this day, I'm looking for that guy that, you know, has something I don't have. You know, there's something more, something that I think a person ought to have. You know, last week I brought Pastor Kerry Miller with me here. I don't know how many people know, she was in like a wheelchair. And I met him at a Bible study. And he's just a wonderful guy. He would have been here tonight. He was starting to come here tonight. He wanted to go to the Bible study afterwards. He loved it. He got such a kick out of it. But he's actually doing a seminar, a sermon for recovering people in downtown Miami, at a recovery church in downtown Miami. That's what he's doing. He felt so bad. He called me up. He says, I really wanted to go with you, but I'm doing this. I said, God bless you. I said, I'm praying for you. You're doing what you're supposed to be doing. I met these guys. I'm 63. He's 83. He's been a Baptist preacher for 63 years. Some of the biggest churches in the United States did revival. Where would a Jewish kid from Long Island? You know anything about Long Island, New York? You know anything about Great Neck, New York? It's like a Jewish ghetto. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, I'm not putting, I mean, it's love. I mean, you know, the chance, I mean, don't know, my grandmother's probably rolling over in her grave or something. You know she's not. You know she's not. You know what I'm talking about? Because after this, I'll hang out with the rabbi and I'll do that deal. You know what I'm talking about? Hey, listen, I know AA is not alive with any sect, denomination, or religion. I know that's true, but you know something? I am. I hope you do one day. I hope man, you don't want to be a floating thing floating around all over the place. You know, Rolling Stone gathers no moss. This is what this program is about, so that you can get alive. What do you think the third step is about? Where you commit your life to God, as you understand. What do you think that's about? It's so you can get alive. This is not so you can, like, float around, you know, not knowing who you are or what you are or what to believe, you know, and being scared that if you believe anything, somebody's going to laugh at you. What's that all about? What is that deal all about? I run into guys like Kerry Miller. I run into guys like my current sponsor. You know, there's always been... One of the interesting things is when you hang around with men who have been around here for a long time, who are serious contenders, you know, they don't take themselves seriously, but they take this stuff seriously. They take God seriously. When you hang around with these men, it always seems there's always one other guy standing around to take their place. When Bob Sullivan died, when my first sponsor died, he was my sponsor for 7, 8, 9 years. And I was at his bedside when he died of cancer. When he died, one of his friends and close associates who I'd always been hanging around was Joe Snyder, and he was my sponsor for 10 or 15 more years. And when he died, I was already going to Bible study, and a guy was sitting next to me who hadn't had a drink in over 48 years, John Glenn, you know, who was a Baptist preacher, he was there to take his place, and he's still my sponsor today. There's always, when you hang around these men, there's always other men that congregate around those men because sort of like likes attract, where you just hang around in this, you know, surrounded by these individuals that are just, you know, have their act together, that are so far down the road from you. I always want to have somebody farther down the road from me. I never want to be so cocky, no matter how much time I have, that I think I really got the answers, because I don't have all the answers. I just got a couple of answers, you know what I mean? I know one thing. Seated with your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. I know one thing, that faith will solve everything. That faith is really the answer. It's all about faith. I know that deal. I know what that's about. That's the deal. So it says, so that was my deal, you know, doing these things. But why did I do these things? Because these men that I hung around with me told me these are the things I had to do. You know, you could probably find somebody, you know, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a big, you know, back in the old days, and Dr. Bob, the good old timers, you had to have what's called the real surrender. You ought to read Dr. Bob and the good old time. You ought to see where we came from, because then you'll see how far we've come away from it. You know, and I'm not putting AA down. AA is like a giant funnel. We've gone to the giant funnel. You know, when AA was first around, you know, there was like about 3 or 4 guys, 10 guys, you know, that was big. You know, all you needed was one guy pissing on the table, and that would have been the end of AA. You know, one guy doing something crazy. So they had to be very careful. They screened people. They screened you before you got into a meeting. You read it. They take you up to the upper room. You'd have to get down on your knees in front of the men and give your life to God. And then they would allow you to go to the meeting. They'd walk down the stairs. They'd say, we had a real surrender. They had you do the third step before you even got into the meeting. Which, I got to tell you something, cuts down on the guys that are making jokes about religion. Really, if in order to get in here today, you had to get down on your knees in front of 5 or 10 men or women and give your life to God. I'm an atheist. Well, I'll see you around. Listen, have a good time. We hope you can make it. When you get to the point where you're desperate and you want to stop drinking and you give up the bullshit and you want to get down on your knees and do it the way we'll do it, we'll invite you into the room. You'll either drink or die or figure out another way. You'll be back here again. Doing it their way, not your way. You know, the chief characteristic of alcoholics is defiance. They wouldn't take the defiance. They didn't need the aggravation. I'm telling you what they did. You don't have to believe me. Read the book. You read the book and find it with what I'm saying isn't true. Now, when you get down on your knees and you give your life to God in front of 10 men and then you get up, and it's a humbling experience, just like speaking up here is a humbling experience. And then you get in the room, believe me, there's no snickering about God. There's no putting down people about God. There's no saying we don't want to hear that crap. You know what the meeting is about? It's about God. It's about Him. You know whatever statement is about, no matter what you bring out, whatever problem, it's all about, let's talk about God. It's all about prayer. That's why if you read this book, that's why they're always talking about prayer. That's why they're always talking about Him. That's why the whole book is about Him. That's why they're saying seated relationship with him is right. That's why they say there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. That's why it says we can't manage your own life. No human power can manage. Only God could and would if he was sought. That's why the entire book, every line is about look to him, look to him. That is why it's at the end of the book. It says this. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only little. God will constantly disclose all and more to you. That's why the whole book is about God. And the reason why the fellowship doesn't want to talk about it at all is because the fellowship is made up, now listen to this, of alcoholics. Now, if you understand about the disease of alcoholism, you'll understand why once you make it into a big funnel and everybody comes in and they say, let's do away with the get down on your knees stuff. Let's let them, they're coming out of the hospital. Let the doctors tell them, don't worry about this stuff. When you start making it easy to come here and easy to be here, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be, and you start getting rid of all the stuff that they had before they got in, all of a sudden you got a large group of alcoholics saying, we don't want to hear this bullshit. But that's not the program. That's just a bunch of alcoholics sitting around the room saying, I don't want to hear this bullshit. Not, that's just unwillingness to do the program the way it's written. I mean, this is about honesty, right? Doesn't say it's the capacity to be honest. I mean, why don't you read the book and see what they were talking about? Read Dr. Bob in the Good Old Times and then compare that to AA today and the meetings you're going to today, where they were serious about this stuff. Because you know why you got to be serious about this stuff? Because the breast implants and the boobs on the things, it's serious shit. You're being attacked out there. They're serious about killing you out there. You're going to walk out there into a world that wants you drinking, drugging, and feeling crappy about yourself. And they're attacking you 24/7. You better have some crazy sons of bitches like me in here. Or else you're not going to be, you're going to be sleepwalking into alcoholism and craziness and not even understand what's going on here unless you have somebody pointing it out to you. And the only reason you're laughing is because you know it's true. Because you wallow in it. And you're trying to figure out what this disease is all about. And that's why at the end of this thing, at this part, it says this, when they talk about the third step. It talks about our selfishness, our self-centeredness. It says that's the root of our trouble. You know, we can't get rid of our selfishness anymore. We can't do it. Here's the bottom line. It says selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of others, they retaliate. They hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some point in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making, and they arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-overrun riot, though he usually doesn't think so. So who cares whether you think so or not? Listen, I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what fellowship you're in. This is our basic text. This is the book we all agree in. I don't care whether you agree with it or not. You didn't get me sober. You're not my higher power. You didn't keep me sober for 31 years. You didn't give me the freedom and the new freedom and the new life I have today. You didn't give me the feelings about myself and other people and what's going on in my life and the only thing that's important. You didn't give me what's going on with me today. This book gave it to me. I believe this book before I believe you. Your best thinking got you in here. You're not doing that great yourself. So, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. You know what that means? That means above everything, we got to get rid of selfishness. That's what it means. I mean, you ought to read this stuff sometimes. You know what it means? It means above everything, you got to get rid of selfishness. No, you know, I got to get a new job. I got to get a new car. No, you don't. You got to get rid of your selfishness. I got to get a new job. No, you don't. You got to get rid of your selfishness. I got to get a new wife. No, what you got to get rid of is your selfishness. You know, on the list of things that you put down that you think you need, nowhere on the list is your selfishness, because you don't think you're selfishness. You don't think you're selfish. You're extremely selfish. We're all extremely selfish. Above everything, we must or it kills us. It'll kill you. Then you know what it says right after that? You know what it says? It says, God makes that possible. God makes that possible. That's what it says. You know, the thing they don't want you talking about in AA meetings, the thing that nobody talks about in AA meetings because they're scared somebody will laugh at them and mock at them, that's the thing that it says makes it possible so that you'll live and not die, and they don't want to talk about it in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says right there, it says, God makes that possible. And you know something they didn't mind talking about because all the men they hung around talked about God, and they got down on their knees, and they had a real surrender, and it was all about God for them, and they wouldn't even recognize AA the way it is today. Because they had quiet times in the mornings and they were reading the Bible and they came out of the Oxford movement and all they did was talk about the Lord and they hung around priests and rabbis and and clergymen and everything like that, they wouldn't have even recognized what the heck's going on in this thing today. So clinical. It's become so clinical. Do the four-step, and it's all psychological. No way of entirely getting rid of it. And the only reason they did that stuff, even though it seems psychological, it says later on when we get to the fifth step, it says so they can remove the obstacles that keeps them from God, that our real purpose is to make ourselves a maximum purpose, give ourselves maximum purpose to God and what he wants us to do. There often seemed no way of entirely getting rid of it without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live it up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we try to reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying. On our own power, we had to have God's help. Not higher power, God's help. You know, throughout this book, 99% of the time, they're talking about God, 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 God. And all people talk about is higher power, higher power, higher power. You know why they don't talk about God? You know why? I'm going to tell you why. Because they don't want to offend anybody. They don't want to offend somebody. The thing that's going to save your life, they're scared of talking about because they're worried about offending the sickest alcoholic in the room. Because this is some sick, crazy alcoholic who's defiant, who's mad at this program and hates religion, doesn't want to talk about God. So rather than lift him up, they're going to bring us all down because they don't want to piss him off. You know, some people need to drink again. Some people need to get pissed off and get desperate again. I wouldn't worry so much about the alcoholic. If you're really worried about that guy, then you need to go to Al-Anon. Because you're not going to help him. Because you're not going to help him by placating him so that he'll like you. You're only going to kill him. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. We had to play. Well, you got to sponsor some more people. We haven't gotten to the 12th step, but the more people you sponsor and the more people you serve, the more you get involved in this disease, this deadly demonic disease, the more you get involved in it, the more you'll realize you're not doing any alcoholic a favor by pandering into him so he'll like you. And not doing any alcoholic a favor by lowering the standards of the truth so that he won't walk out the room. They need to walk out of the room. Well, he might drink. Good. Good. They're about as common as dirt. You know, they're going to drink anyway. You're not going to stop them. You're acting like some alcoholic wife, you know. Maybe if I'll do this, he won't drink. Maybe I'll do that, he won't drink. You know, be sucking your thumb. Why did this guy drink? Why did that guy drink? Some people need to drink. You're here because you drank. If you didn't drink, you wouldn't be here. Next, we decided, this is how and why, but first we had to play God. It didn't work. Next, we decided here and after in this trial of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We're his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple. This concept was the keystone. It's the keystone. It's the main deal. The keystone of the triumphant arch for which we pass the freedom. It's the main deal. You don't get this, you don't get nothing. When we sincerely took this position, this is page 63, real important, such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Do you want remarkable things to happen in your life? I mean, what do you want? 14 years sobriety, how are you doing? Hanging in there? Is that what you want? You want a 26 years sobriety, how are you doing? Hanging in there, one day at a time. You don't want to experience much of heaven? You don't want to be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence? You don't want to have God, the Creator, living in your heart? This is the great fact. Just somehow, miraculously, he's changing us. God is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. You don't want that experience with God where he totally transforms you. You want to be hanging in there. That's what you want. That's the life you want. When we sincerely tried to take such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He's not the higher power. He's the highest power, and there's only one. There's not 17, you understand? You don't want the assistant deputy power. It's the highest power, it's God, the deity, not the doorknob, not the plant. You understand what I'm saying? Not your AA group. Listen, I understand this is like a spiritual kindergarten. I understand we all hate God. We don't want to hear this stuff. So I understand for the time being, the first month, the first two, the first three, you know, God could be your sponsor, higher power could be the group, all these fuzzy ideas. But you know something? After a while, you really, you know, I understand you could fake it before you make it. You fake it until you make it, right? But eventually, you're supposed to make it. You understand? So, you know, somewhere along the line, you got to graduate from drinking milk, you know, your mother's milk, and actually grow the hell up and become a man. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Being all powerful, God will provide what you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. So what do you have to do? Stay close to him and perform his work well. Is there anything in there about a car?
Is there anything in there about your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your job or any of that stuff? It's about God's will, performing His work and staying close to Him, which means that you pretty much better be focused on who He is and what He's about and what is His will for you. You know? And you don't need to have a lot of money to know what His will is for you. You don't need any money to have God in your life and have a relationship with Him. You know, no matter where you are, you can have a relationship with Him. Established on that kind of footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs, less selfish. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. New people. Different people on a different basis. And then it has the third step prayer. I offer myself today. And then after that, it says this. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly. I love that word, utterly. They don't say abandon ourselves to Him. They say utterly to Him. Utterly to Him. Give yourself a total surrender. Now, I understand, you know, the truth of that matter is in my life, there's surrender upon surrender. You know, it's like, okay, now what do you want next? What do you want? You want the car now? You want the wife? You want the kid? You want, what do you want? It's always, what are you going to put in front of God? You know? What's the number one commandment? You know, I'm the Lord your God. You know? Only me. You know, I'm a jealous God. You know, I'll put me number one. That's the number one thing. You know, all I can tell you is this. The men I hung out with and the men I continue to hang on with focus on these principles. The principles that are laid out in this book, the principles that are laid out in the Bible, Old and New Testament, it doesn't matter. The principles that are laid out, they focus on this, and they never have a problem with the booze or the craziness. And the people that don't want to follow this thing and are fighting this thing, get mad at this thing, and focus on the cars and the bars and the girls and this and the and all the stuff that we're talking about, there's always problems. There's always divorces, the third life, the fourth life. There's nothing that ever satisfies. There's always problems. Now, here's the cool thing. You're all big boys and girls. You're not 10 years old. I'm not your daddy, your mommy, or anything like that. You can do whatever you... This is what... If you want what we have and you're willing to go in, every one of you is going to decide who your we is going to be. You know, every one of you, you decide who you hang out with. Really, you decide who you call up on the phone. You decide who you go to see. You decide... You make the decision as to what you listen to and what you decide to believe and what you don't decide to believe. I don't make the decision for you. You decide. And the decisions you make as to who you decide to hang out with and what you decide to do and how you decide to do it intentionally, and I hope you do it intentionally. You know, a lot of people just sort of like go with the flow. Wherever they're going here, they're going here. But the decisions you make will have a lot to do with what your life is going. You know, it's if you keep on walking in the direction you're walking, you're going to wind up where you're headed. I mean, you're going to wind up exactly where you're headed. If you change your direction, that's what happened to me. You run into some guy, and all of a sudden you're walking in this direction, and he changes you like 2 degrees to the right, and all of a sudden you're walking in a different direction. You run into another guy, 2 degrees to the right, you walk into another direction. One day I ran into James, you know, this guy sitting here. You know, I'm not going to tell his story, but I am his sponsor. I run into James, he's at some meeting with some gal that he's trying to lay, you know what I mean?
She was trying to.
Yeah, I know, whatever, delusional, you know, and he goes to the meeting, and what happened? He said, whatever, that has nothing to do with me. He looks at me, he listens to me, he says, I want what this guy has, and he drives in the car with me. He starts talking. Next thing I know, I'm sponsoring this banana, and he says, what should I do? I said, why don't you find a Bible study? He said, I'm Jewish. I said, find a Jewish Bible study. I got tattoos. I said, find a Jewish Bible study. So he finds a Jewish Bible study. I mean, I guess this is where you found it, right? He was clean shaven. Now he's got a beard and he's here. You know what I mean? And he started this group, and I was the first that I spoke. There were like 10 people.
Correct.
You know, what did it have to, what was the deal with him? I mean, we could talk about the prayers and the deal with him is he saw something that he wanted. You understand? It could have been me, it could have been somebody else. It's not me. It has nothing to do with me anyway, because I know who I am. I know who I am. I know what I was doing at 3 o'clock in the morning when I was down on my knees. I know the people I was hurting. I know this is all about God working in my life. Anything that's good about me has to do with God. You know, believe me, if you want to know who I'm all, I know exactly who I'm all about because I used to live with me and I know what I was like before God got a hold of me, okay? So I know exactly what the deal is. I don't take any credit for this stuff, you know? So what happens? He, for whatever reason, said, I want to walk in this direction. Next thing you know, he's walking here. He meets somebody over there. He meets somebody over here. Now he's part of the Chabad over here, right?
Yes.
We're going to a Bible study after this,
correct,
right? You know, they could be, I don't care if the trustees are freaking over this. They're waiting for us, you know? They're waiting for the Bible study. That's how it works. This is no mystery. There's no mystery what God can do. What he's done for others, he can do for you. What he's done for James, he can do for you. What he's done for anybody who's followed him and does his will and focuses on him, he can do for you. He'll give you an incredible life. It's an unbelievable life. So thank you very much. God bless you.